Dolan on Talk Radio.
After 12 o'clock, we are going stateside to speak to Harold Schechter, author of Ripped from the Headlines, the shocking true stories behind the movie's most memorable crimes. Looking forward to that. Speaking of crime, let's take a look at our podcast of the week. It is True Crime Investigators UK. It's a brand new podcast. It's getting loads of downloads. It's looking at unsolved crimes, important criminal cases, and it delves further into the procedural process. It's presented by husband and wife sleuthing double act of John and Sally. John was a police officer for 30 years, and for most of his service was a detective investigating crime. Sally served 12 years as a police officer, also a detective, and wound up back practicing criminal law before they both retired and have gone full-time as rather brilliant broadcasters. John and Sally, welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting us, Mark.
So ultimately, you can retire from the job, Sally, but the job won't ever retire you.
No, that's right. I did 12 years in the police, and obviously investigating crime. And then I retrained as a lawyer. And initially, I did lots of civil cases and practiced in the civil courts. But the draw was back to crime. So I then went and practiced in the criminal courts.
Yeah, I mean, is it a certain kind of character, a certain kind of personality that is drawn to police detective work? Because the fact that you're now retired but still voluntarily do it suggests that it was more than just a living for you and John.
I think it was more of a way of living, more of a style. Mm. And yes, it does keep pulling us back to the world of crime, even though we're now retired.
Is it about catching baddies? Is it about that battle between good and evil? What do you think makes somebody become a detective?
I think there's definitely the thrill of the chase. Mm. and a battle of wits.
Well, indeed. Now, John, you obviously have been married to Sally for many years. Are there any occupational hazards to being married with a cop?
They know exactly what you're up to. That's one of them.
Yes, and they're very hard to lie to, aren't they?
Yeah, certainly Sally is. So I don't tell lies.
No, your life wouldn't be worth. Because ultimately, I mean, I don't think any wife should be lied to or can be lied to. But you probably are very good, joking apart, John, at spotting the kind of body language if somebody is being evasive or not telling the truth. Can you spot that when it's happening?
To a certain extent, yes. I mean, with being a long-serving police officer, 30 years. You've met so many characters. We listen with interest to one of your previous guests, Stephen
Gillen, yes, author of the Monkey Puzzle Tree, yeah.
Yeah, and there's many people like Stephen. There's all sorts of different characters, and when you've spoken to them, dealt with them, interviewed them and investigated them, you sort of pick up all the little signs, and it's not a foolproof method, obviously, but you certainly pick up the obvious signs and latch on to untruths, if you like.
Indeed. Sally, do you think that the best detective needs to be, I don't know, have a slightly criminal part of their own brains that they can tap into so you can access that sort of mentality of the bad guy or the bad woman?
Do you have
to step in their shoes to crack the case?
I think you do have to step in their shoes. I think the thing that some people think about from a police or a prosecuting point of view is that you are only looking at a prosecution case, but you're not. You've got to then look at it from the other side and step into the defendant's shoes and look at it from both sides. You wouldn't be doing the best job you could if you didn't do that.
Indeed. I mean, John, you only have to watch, Hollywood movies about, about criminals, or some of those page turning novels to perhaps develop the idea that there's a very fine line between the detective and the criminal. They're almost two sides of the same coin, if you ask some people. What do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think there's a very fine line, and unfortunately some police officers step over that line. Mm. As we know, there's the papers, we all read them and see the news. But I think the people I've spoke to in my 30 years, when you say, why have you done these things? Why do you do this? And a lot of it is the thrill of the chase, the sort of using your brain to outwit other people, and they do it for the criminal gain. We do it the other way around for the same purposes, really, but to catch them and hopefully prevent crime. So there is a very fine line. I totally agree. And I read avidly. We're sat in our library at the moment with our little studio we've got at home, and we read, and that's what started us on the podcast trail, really. We read a lot of crime books.
And, of course, a lot of reformed criminals who take a better path later in life, including Stephen Gillan, who we spoke to earlier, can be a very useful resource for the police. And, you know, there are many a case been cracked thanks to the advice of reformed criminals.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, one of the cases we're looking at, which we'll come on to, no doubt, is an undetected murder that took place in Derby, which is I worked on in, it was in November 97, and we're going to do a podcast type investigation, like almost a Crime Watch type presentation, but do it as a podcast to try and encourage people to come forward. And we do get a lot of people come forward, a lot of criminals, especially where people are murdered or very seriously hurt, because there's the unwritten rule, it's okay to steal things possibly and, you know, have your car or whatever, but you don't hurt people. And when people are hurt or killed, it goes over the line. And we do get, and I've experienced it, most police officers, where you do get people come forward and help detect the crime.
Indeed. Now, your first three brilliant podcasts, which, as you say, contain like interviews, you've gone to the scenes of the crime, you're looking for evidence, you're going through historical records. It's a meticulously put together show and well worth a listen. You focus in the first three episodes on the Wendy Sewell murder. And this was a tragic young woman whose murder was linked to that of the Yorkshire Ripper Peter Sutcliffe, but remains unsolved.
Yes, we're going back to 1973 to a market town in Derbyshire called Bakewell, beautiful little town, sleepy little place, very tourist attractive, you know, a lot of tourists visit. And in 73, Wendy Sewell, for reasons we don't understand, left a place of work in the town centre and walked to the outskirts of the town to a graveyard. And there's various conflicting reasons why she was there, but she met a very brutal death in the middle of the day, in broad daylight. She was struck from behind savagely, as is described by the pathologist, with a pickaxe handle.
Wow.
And that's what sort of instigated the police inquiry and the arrest of Stephen Downing.
Indeed, who you interview in the podcast.
Absolutely, yes. We spoke to Stephen and his sister, Chrissy, who's also on the podcast, but sadly, since we made that recording, she's since passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
But Stephen served 27 years in prison for what he said he didn't commit that crime. It eventually went before the Court of Appeal, and for various technical reasons and forensic reasons, they said that it was an unsound conviction. Not that he was innocent, but he was unsound. And he actually was released from prison after 27 years.
So when did he, roughly when did he get out? A few years ago?
He was...
10 years ago, maybe?
He was given bail pending appeal at the end of 2001.
Right.
And then the matter was heard by the Court of Appeal on the 15th of January 2002. So he walked out of the Court of Appeal with his conviction being quashed in January 2002.
So he's not able to sort of walk the streets as an innocent man, but a free man at least.
Yes, he's a free man. He openly admits that he wasn't found innocent of the crime, he was found that it was unsound. So he accepts that. But although, going back to 1973, he was a 17-year-old youth then with a mental age of about 11. And of course, the laws of those days in 1973 didn't really recognise people with learning difficulties and mental health issues.
Or understand them, of course, right?
Or understand them, absolutely.
Vulnerability.
Vulnerability,
yeah.
Yes. So, of course, he did admit the offence initially, but then retracted it and went to the Crown Court in Nottingham and denied the offence. But, you know, he's a lad there who, you know, admitted it, and there was some forensic evidence which was then disputed at the future Court of Appeal, and that helped him get released. So it's an unsolved crime as it is at the moment.
Your attention to detail is second to none for a sort of true crime podcast, because you're photographed on your website, truecrimeinvestigators.co.uk, photographed with Stephen, whose conviction was considered unsafe, photographed with him at Bakewell Cemetery, where this poor woman was found dead.
Yes, when we got to Stephen via the author involving the Yorkshire Ripper, Chris Clark, which we can speak about, but via Chris, we got to Stephen, and he said, "I'm quite willing to be interviewed," and we told him what we were going to do and what the podcast was about. And I said, "Where can we see you?" And he said, "Well, he does live not far from the scene of the murder, actually." So he said, "I'll go to the graveyard if you wish, and I'll point out Amazing. The locations and the events that happened." And in fact, his parents are buried in that graveyard as well. So he said, "I've got no." We thought, you know, perhaps he won't want to go anywhere near the place, but he was quite happy. And we have interviewed him, as you say, and videoed him on the website.
Well, indeed, it's perfect subject matter for a true crime podcast, but also perfect subject matter for, you know, retired professionals like yourselves, given that you've got, you know, it ticks all the boxes, right? A potential miscarriage of justice, a tragic, violent murder, and ultimately, we can say an unsolved crime. If that verdict was considered unsafe, then it's clearly there must be another suspect.
Yes, it's a very sort of involved tale, and there's been several books written on it, and there was a newspaper editor for the Matlock Mercury, which is a town adjacent to Bakewell, a bit further down the road, called Don Hale, and Stephen's parents weren't getting very far with the appeal, because it's not easy to get an appeal unless you've got the wherewithal and some backing behind you. So eventually they went to Don Hale, who took it on as like an investigative journalist would do, and researched it and pushed and pushed and pushed. And he uncovers a tale of all sorts of grey areas, let's put it like that, where Wendy, although she'd been married, she'd had a child out of a marriage, and it goes on and on. And, and of course, although Don doesn't name these people, no doubt for libel reasons, it sort of casts a lot of doubt and a lot of unanswered questions as to who actually did kill Wendy Sewell. And of course, that was the interest we had when we made the podcast.
We considered the alternatives, and no doubt you've heard that in the podcast, that if you believe that Stephen Downing didn't kill Wendy Sewell, then who did? And that's what takes us on to consider other options. And that's when we talked to the author, Chris Clark, who himself is a retired police intelligence officer, who's written a book in relation to the Yorkshire Ripper. And we make some observations in relation to Peter Sutcliffe's victims and Wendy Sewell.
Potential similarities. I mean, Sally, it is late night radio, so you can be as detailed as you are comfortable being. But for those that don't know, can you tell us a bit about the Yorkshire Ripper, the notorious Peter Sutcliffe?
Well, Peter Sutcliffe was dubbed the Yorkshire Ripper because it was believed that his offences took place in the Yorkshire area. And there was also murders that occurred in the Manchester area.
And of course, he was a serial killer. It was an expression designed to echo that of Jack the Ripper 100 years previously.
That's right. And I think that's, in a way, that's the label that they gave him, the Yorkshire Ripper, was somewhat misleading because there are suggestions that there are other cases throughout the country away from Yorkshire that bear some hallmarks of Peter Sutcliffe's offending.
Indeed. And of course, you know, that wouldn't be, if it were to be that, you know, you could link him to this crime, it wouldn't be the first case of somebody already incarcerated who gets linked to other crimes. And we've heard of examples such as Levi Belfield, who's been linked to other crimes since he got put away.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And Levi Belfield is a good case in point. Yes.
Does it bother you that somebody like Peter Sutcliffe is still at Her Majesty's pleasure? It's a strange thought to think that this guy still enjoys life, isn't it, somehow?
It is, but I think it's one of those things where the way that I look at it is we had all these heinous crimes committed, and it's not just the victims of the crimes, but it's also their families as well. And he was brought to he was charged, he was taken to court, and he is still in prison, and that must be some kind of
closure.
If you call it closure, some kind of closure for those families.
Well, indeed. So let me tell you that it really is a great listen. The first three episodes are devoted to the investigation, the reinvestigation of the Wendy Sewell murder. It's fascinating. And if you give it a listen, you may be able to make your own mind up about what happened. And was this chap, Stephen Downing, the victim of a gross miscarriage of justice? That's what's lovely about the podcast, is your listeners can decide. With the clock
Absolutely.
Against us, Sally, what's next? Next step, what can we look forward to? I say look forward to in inverted commas.
Well, the next one, Mark, is the Michael Pritchard case, which I was involved in November 1997. And he was a van driver delivering catalogue-type parcels. This was before the days of Amazon and the parcels we now get delivered. He was a lovely man, a lovely family man, and he was going about his normal everyday delivery business, and he approached a little village called Kirk Langley, which is on the outskirts of Derby. As he goes into this cul-de-sac in this rural village, he goes to the door with a parcel. He leaves his van running, and there's three youths in the late teens, early 20s, one of which sees what's happening, sees the vehicle, gets in and starts to, you know, make an effort to drive away. And, of course, Michael sees what's happening, and to sort of a long story cut short, he stands in front of the van trying to stop it being stolen.
Amazing.
And of course, eventually they run over him and he's died sadly at the scene.
Well, you will hear the rest of that grisly tale on a fabulous podcast. It is called True Crime Investigators UK, and it's out now. Download it wherever you can. Thank you, John and Sally. This is Talk Radio.
Talk Radio.